Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. This is the show where I, Luke Burridge, review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. It's been a while since I've done a review, mainly because I've been reading some quite a few other books. There's one called The Gardens of the Moon by Stephen Erickson. It's a fantasy book, and it's a bit weird. I've got about halfway through it, but it's really not catching me. It's really not gripping me. So that's sort of my normal book reading. On top of that, I read a book. Well, I listened to the book by Stephen King, because someone sent a message. Did I talk about this on a previous podcast? I can't remember. But someone sent me a message saying, hey, you should check out some of Stephen King's work, because that is quite a bit. It's just science fiction, and you'll probably really enjoy it. Things like The Stand and Under the Dome and other books that he's written as science fiction. So I looked on Audible.com to see if I can download a book, and lots of his books are really, really long, but I found one that was quite short, and it was on writing, his memoir and his book about writing. And I listened to that, and it was actually really, really good. I really enjoyed it, because he starts off talking, it's just like, oh yeah, when I was a child I was doing this, oh, and this was my first time I've written, and this, and he just tells the story of his life as a writer. But there's a lot more of his life in the book than it is him talking about writing. But you come to realize that actually the reason why he writes like he does is because he's had the life that he has had. And I'm not sure there was a whole lot that I could apply to my own writing that I read in the book, but it was a very interesting read. Even if you've got no plans of ever writing a novel or doing any creative writing, I really do recommend On Writing by Stephen King. It's a really interesting book. So getting on to today's episode, this book is called When Gravity Fails by George Alec Effinger. And I haven't had time to make any notes or anything like that, so I'm just going at this completely just off the top of my head while this book is fresh in my mind. And I've got open here the goodreads.com page about it. So it says here, 288 pages, first published in 1987. 288 pages works out as around about 11 hours worth of audio book listening. And thankfully, the narrator was Jonathan Davis, who is one of my favorite audiobook narrators. I'll talk about him a little bit later on. So let's set this whole thing up. This book, maybe I'll read a little bit of this blurb here as well. It says, in the decadent world of cheap pleasures and easy death, married Audran has kept his independence the hard way. Still, like everything else in the Buddha Yin, he's available for a price. So what we have here is Morid Audran is a Muslim in an Islamic city, I'm guessing somewhere in North Africa, maybe Egypt, maybe a little bit further east into the Middle East somewhere there. And it's set in, maybe 200 years time or something like that, near the end of the 22nd century, I guess. And it's cyberpunk set in a Muslim world, in an Islamic city. And the world itself is all broken up. Oh, this is a cool thing. It's written before the end of the Cold War. And the way that most science fiction was written in the 1980s, they either saw that, you know, the Cold War was going to last forever and ever and ever, or if they're American, they saw that the Cold War would be won by the Americans and the Russians would be out of the picture. But here we have something different, that at the end of the Cold War in our life, in our timeline, the Soviet Union all split apart at the end of the Cold War. And he sees the world where not just the Soviet Union split apart, but also America split apart into different countries as well, and Europe all split apart into different countries, and well, it's still in different countries, but you know, like the European Union no longer exists. There's no governing body of world politics, and all of these different countries, like Germany is going up against Poland, and Poland is going up against Belarus, and Belarus is going up against all these different countries, you know, and there's different states, not states in America anymore, but different countries. So there's like the New England Confederacy and this and that and mentioned. However, all the action does take place in this Middle Eastern city, this unnamed city. I was just talking to, was it Jesse? Yeah, Jesse, I talked to you yesterday because he was, the reason why I'm reading this book is because it came up on one of the SFF audiobooks. I think Scott mentioned it, and it had some really great quotes from some other science fiction authors. So I was chatting to him about it, and I said, I can't remember the city where it is. Where was the city? And then I looked on the Amazon.com page, and it said, oh yeah, it takes place in an unnamed Islamic city. But the Islamic world has progressed socially in different ways, but it's also progressed a lot technologically. And now the Arab world is, and the Islamic world is once again at the forefront of technology and science. And when the Americans come in to this city, that the boats pull up and all the people come across into the red light districts, the Budayeen, where Married Audrin works and lives, they seem to be, as now we would treat people from, say, I don't know, somewhere in Asia who never come out, you know, or maybe someone from Africa. They come to a big city and they're like, oh wow, look at all these big buildings, oh look at all this technology, oh life is so fast here in this city. So yeah, in fact it's pretty much like going to, say, someone like Dubai, and you go around Dubai and everything's big and everything's brash. But like I say, they've not just gone on technologically, but also going on socially in some way. So most of the action takes place within what's called the Budayeen, and that is the red light district. It's like this walled off area. Like, I'm thinking, like, I've been to Casablanca and they have the Medina there, and you go around Medina, isn't it, where you get like a marketplace and you go around and you buy food and stuff like that. It feels a bit like that. There's one main street with lots of back alleys going off, and at one end is the gate into the Budayeen, and at the other end is the graveyard, because a lot of people die in the Budayeen, and the police really don't give a shit when someone dies there. They don't even care. They send out a policeman who goes, well, whatever, like that. So all the action takes place in here. Technologically, we are more advanced. No, we'll talk about socially. One really interesting point of this is that sex change operations are normal, especially if you're living in the sex industry quarter of the town. So probably half of the characters in this book were once women and are now men, and were once men and are now women, or they were once women and now they're men, but now they're dressed up in drag. You know, and there's all these different ways of looking at these different, you know, these different figures and these different sexualities. There's a whole spectrum of people being able to swap sexual identity in one way and swap sexual physicality, you know, physiologically in a different way, and it's all that kind of stuff. I really, really enjoyed this this idea. At the beginning, I just thought, oh, this is a bit silly. But then there was this turning point. I'll talk about this later in the review as well, about turning point about halfway through, when I'm suddenly like, oh right, this isn't just a science fiction backdrop to the story. Suddenly the whole sex change thing and different people being taking on different identities and things like that, suddenly very important to the story. But at the beginning I was like, oh yeah, whatever, like that. And also at the beginning of the story, we find out about these different mind wiring, so you can wire up your brain in a different way. Now, our main character, Married Audran, he has never had a sex change, as far as I know. No, he hasn't, because he talks about his childhood as a boy, but he also hasn't had his brain wired. But most of the other people that he meets around the Budayeen have had their brains wired. And there's two different implants that you, well, not implants, it's two different modules that you can plug in to your brain wiring. One is called a Moddy, and one is called a Daddy. And a Moddy is, it gives you a whole new personality. It filters your entire perception through the Moddy and feeds it to you as though you're a different person, or as though you're in somebody else's body. So if you want to be, one of the examples that we get right at the very beginning of the book is that someone comes in and he's dressed up as James Bond, and he's got a James Bond Moddy in. And the reason he's dressed up as James Bond is because he implanted the personality of James Bond into his body, into his mind. And then his mind is going, hey, tell you what, I want to look cool. I want to look smooth. I want to have a, you know, I want to have a gun. I want to have a bow tie. I want to drink, you know, shaken not stirred drinks, etc. Vodka martinis, shaken not stirred, or whatever James Bond has. And because of that, he's thinking that, and that's in his brain, he goes out and he buys a new suit, and he goes out and he, you know, he gets that gun, and he goes out and he buys those drinks, and he tries to seduce women in bars. So it really does take over, and then you can pop that out and you're yourself again, and you can pop in a different personality and live as somebody else. And there's a shop in the Budayeen where you can go in and get these different moddies. On top of that, you've got the daddies, and the daddies, I can't remember why they're called daddies, some data addition thing, I think. And what they do, they just give you extra capabilities. So you plug in a daddy and suddenly you can speak a different language, and you pop in a daddy and suddenly you're really good at maths. You pop in a daddy and you're very good at, you know, different mental facilities, and you can learn different things just by popping it in. And when you pop it in, it feels like you've known that for your whole life, which, you know, if you think about the Matrix, you know, that same kind of thing. Oh, let's just download, can I fly a helicopter? Not yet. Zroom. So like, I know Kung Fu. Zroom. And you know Kung Fu. That kind of thing. You can just insert it into your brain. Of course, when you pop it out again, you don't can't remember it then, it doesn't download into your brain permanently. But I guess if you do something and you remember what it was like to have that memory, you'd be able to remember it, but it doesn't stick with you long term. So that's, you got these moddies and these daddies. I think that's all I need to say now about the world and the setup and the different technological styles of things. There are some different bits and pieces, but that's it. So getting on to our main character, Moriad Ordran. He is some kind of fixer, private investigator slash sometimes pimp, sometimes petty criminal. He just lives in the Budayin and hangs out in the bars. He knows all of the strippers. He knows all the prostitutes. He knows all the people who have the bars. And he just goes around and he hops from one bar to the next. And he takes masses and masses of amounts of drugs because that's what he does, because he doesn't have the brain wiring. So all of the times that he needs to be picked up, he just takes drugs, and then he takes alcohol, and then he takes different drugs, and then he sends himself to sleep with some drugs. And when he needs to carry on, he can't just pop in a daddy, which makes him go, oh, you're not hungry. He has to just take drugs to trick himself into not being hungry. So, at the beginning of the story, he's in this bar, and James Bond comes in, and he turns James Bond away, and then somebody else comes in and say, hey, I'm someone from the Russian Federation of, I think it's Belarus, and I've been told that you will be able to track down this person. Who is it? It's my cousin. No, it's my nephew. I want to track down my nephew. And Moriad Ordran is going, well, I'm not sure how I can do it. How long has he been missing? Oh, he's been missing 4 years. And he's like, well, that's a bit tricky. If he's been missing 4 years in the Budayin, he's been missing a long time. Or if he's in this city, he could be anywhere, you know. But what happens is that Moriad Ordran gets given like 1,000 credits per day to try and track down this guy's nephew. But before he can actually take the job or anything like that, James Bond comes back, shoots this Russian Federation of Belarusian diplomat through the head with his Beretta, and then escapes. And everyone's like, holy shit, someone's been shot, like that. The police come along and they track down, you know, they work it out, and they take the information that this guy has given Moriad, and they say to Moriad, they say, the police say, hey, don't worry about it. We actually tracked him down with this data. He was in a car accident a few years ago. There's nothing to be had here. And then, of course, Moriad Ordran, he's still got his 3,000 credits, and he's going, great, 3,000 credits up. The next step along the way is a friend of his is like, suddenly, hey, I'm a prostitute and I want to get out. I want to buy my way out of my contract from my pimp. And he's like, okay, I'll arrange a meeting and do that kind of stuff. And he becomes then it's this whole kind of thing. So he becomes he vouches for this prostitute, Nikki, that the prostitute will pay her way out of the thing. But instead of her paying the way out of her contract, she suddenly disappears. And he is left holding the bag. Nikki has gone, and now he has to pay back the local crime boss. And there's a big faff around here. Now, this story, you're going, oh, what's interesting about this story? It's just crime happening. And it took me a while, like I say, halfway up until about the first third of the book, I was going, all right, okay, well, this is interesting, this is great, but not really that interesting, because it's like the cyberpunk kind of thing. You know, people are doing their brain modifications, and there's lots of drugs, and it's in the future, and lots of data is being passed around. But really, it was just a crime novel of someone like Moriad. I didn't really like him that much. Well, I did in a way. He was like an honorable thief, but he was just hanging out with prostitutes and hanging out with crime bosses, and I never could really work out what the book was about, except, you know, people hanging out in a red light district doing things and killing people by accident and killing people on purpose and ripping people off and that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, that's not so good. And then more people started dying, and I was like, oh, okay, this is a bit interesting. And then suddenly it dawned on me that, oh, wait a second, so that it seems like these murders are disconnected, but it's actually could be the same murderer, but with putting in different moddies into his or her brain. And so it looks like there's different people are doing the murders. There's different MOs, isn't it? That's the term, isn't it? The police term. Different MOs and different ways of killing different weapons and different things like that. And you're looking at it going, oh, and then it's like, oh, right, okay, so actually the moddies and the daddies really does come into it, you know, with that different, you know, implants and things like that. And suddenly you go, ah, oh, like that. And then, of course, it was two-thirds of the book just before Morid, or maybe half the way through the book, just before Morid suddenly comes up with the same revelation, suddenly I had the same revelation. It was like, oh, wait a second. There could be two murderers, but both of them have in their head, they're both using the same standard Moddy. So maybe two people, I know it's a mild spoiler there, that's not really what the book is about, but it is very interesting as you're going through, you're going, oh, wait a second. Oh, right, so it doesn't matter what the murder looks like. It could be two completely different murders taking place by the same person, but they look completely different. Or it could be two murders taking place exactly the same, and they're exactly the same because they both implanted the same set of memories and the same interactions with the world as you get with one of these Moddies. It's that whole kind of thing. So there is much larger conspiracy and all these different kinds of things happening, and it's up to Morid to track down the killers. He's told by the main crime boss called Freelander something, I can't remember his name now, the one of these main characters. Oh, I tell you what, let me open up the Wikipedia page. I'm sure there's here when Grav. I don't know why this book is called When Gravity Fails. I never seem to come up in the book. So here it goes. When Gravity Fails. Maybe I can get out some character names. They'll be in here as well. So the protagonist, yeah. Freelander Bay. Freelander Bay is the main crime boss in the whole city. And so up until halfway through the book, our main character, he has gone completely without any brain modifications, but halfway through he kind of gets tricked into getting his kind of modification here. It says here, partly experimental cybernetic modifications in advanced form of the brain wiring. So that's what he gets, and suddenly the whole book halfway through changes, and we suddenly see the rest of the book and the rest of the story told from the point of view who now is someone who has their brains wired, and he gets these different, like I say, experimental wirings. And what's really great, just skipping forward to some writing style, I really loved it. The whole book is told in the kind of, you know, noir style crime. Hey, I did this. I went to talk to that person. And it's all in the first person. And then when he pops in somebody else's personality in the second half of the book, suddenly it skips, it trips. It turns into third-person narrative, and he's seeing himself, and he's seeing this other character from the third person, and then when he goes back to himself, it goes back into first person. And I was just reading this, I'm like, this is awesome. It's just such a clever way. Would I have thought of doing that myself? But it's just a really clever little twist in the writing that he does there as well. So the story is very good. Like I say, up until halfway through the book, I was like, what's really going on here? And then the second half of the book, I just listened to it all in like 2 days, you know, like 6 hours, 3 hours a day. I just polished off this book because it's really a lot of fun. The plot kicks into gear, the conspiracies start kicking in, the different mysteries start kicking in, different characters come in, and we find out the true identities of other characters and things like that. It's really, really good fun. What next up? Oh yeah, characters. Normally talk about these characters in the book. I really like the characters here. Morid he's like an outsider. He's not from the Egyptian or Syrian city or wherever this thing is, but he comes from further west in Africa, like northwest Africa. So he comes from like Tunisia or maybe not Tunisia, maybe Algeria or somewhere along the top there. And yeah, so he's come in, and like I say, I really like the fact that he's this outsider, and the reason he isn't wired up isn't because it's against his religion or anything like that, it's because he's just really afraid of it. He's got a phobia for getting his brain wired, but everyone else, for them, in the Buddha Yin, it's completely normal. What I really enjoy about it, though, is his Arab cultural background, that like all the time he's talking, he's like doing this, and then he explains to us as the listeners, like, yeah, I said this, but that's actually the Arab word, or that's the when Arabs say that to each other, or when Muslims say that to each other, it really means this, and somebody else will say something, and it's like, oh, then we got out the way, the formal pleasantries, and the way that he makes his way through is great. But coming back to the mind-bending drugs that he takes, it's a lot of fun when he describes all the drugs that he's taking, and people see him taking these drugs drugs, and they're like, what? How are you not dead? You've just massively overdosed. He's like, no, it's no problem. It's no problem. I get through this. And his character changes so much as he takes these different drugs. And as he takes some drugs, he's like, oh, I'm going to give up. I'm not going to do my job. I'm going to go out of here. And then he takes more drugs, and later, still in the first person, it's first person past tense, but what he's thinking at the time as he's taking the drugs and how they affect his mind really changes his way. Now, his main love interest throughout this book is Yasmin, and sort of a girlfriend, and says that he loves her. But it's Yasmin is a sex change, post-operation, transgender, what do you call it? Yeah, whatever. So that's really funny to have someone, and it's great that he's a man, but Yasmin used to be a man. So when Yasmin wants her way, Yasmin can just slap him about, slap moderate about, so it's a very equal relationship in some ways. But then he's always talking about, oh yeah, and there she was. It's like even when you're not, even when you're a sex change woman, even like if you weren't born a woman, you suddenly become a woman, and then of course you're going to start leaving your underwear on my floor and taking money out of my wallet. And it's just some really, really clever ways of looking at gender stereotypes. What was the book? Cold Steel. No, what was it called? Steel Beach by John Barnes has the same kind of thing where halfway through the book, the main character has a sex change. And you have that same kind of comments where people can change sex backwards and forwards. And of course, that's what happens in this book. And you get some really great character moments when people go from one side to the other. And also, there's some bad guys in this book. And you actually really like the bad guys. They're mysterious. And they're even better bad guys because they can implant the memories and implant the personalities of really, really bad guys. So, oh, hey, there's this really bad serial killer. I'm going to plug his character into my brain, and then I'm going to finish there as well. And the way that these different characters interact all the way through to the end, as they change, as they have sex changes, as they rewire their brains, as they take drugs and going back, it just keeps all the relationships really fresh. Sometimes when Modred goes into and starts talking to Friedlander Bay, So when he's talking to him, sometimes he's very subservient, and then he takes drugs, and there's all this kind of stuff. I know it sounds simple, but it's just like, I love characters who can change so much throughout the book, and they still have the core personality underneath the wires, underneath the drugs, underneath the relationships that are changing. They can sort of stay the same, but change all the way through at the same time. Oh, did I mention, I should really make notes as I do this kind of thing. The end of the book, the ending is really good. It's one of my favorite endings of a book that I've read for a long, long time, because I'm not going to say, let me put it this way, if you're expecting a bad, sad ending, you're not going to get it. It's going to be a happy ending. Or if you're expecting a happy ending, you're not going to get it. It's a sad ending. But I'm just saying, whatever you think is going to happen towards the end of this book, the last few pages of this book really kick you in the guts in the opposite way. It really sort of tickles your brain in the opposite way as well. Moving on to science and technology is normally this point. I'm looking at my notes and I've got a blank screen in front of me, but I'm just looking at the Goodreads.page or Wikipedia page. What does it say here? Plot synopsis, I've done that. Well, let's talk about the technology. No, I've talked about the technology. Really, it's like I say, it's mostly the drugs, the brain modifications, the sex change. There's not a whole lot of other stuff going on there. Of course, this was written back in 1987, but it's set 200 years in the future. Now, you could almost set this 50 years in the future or 20 years in the future, because the thing that would actually hold this back more is the societal change within this Islamic country. I think if they catch up the technology, we're probably going to get there a lot quicker than 200 years as it posits here in this book. The writing style is really, really, really good fun. Because, like I say, it's all written through the perspective of someone who is brought up in this Arab world. But an Arab world which is, in some ways, closer to what we have now, because they're less worried about drink and less worried about drugs and less worried about sex change operations and red light districts existing within their, within major cities in Arab countries. But culturally, there's still a massive amount there. So their days are worked out by calls to prayer, and the meetings that they have is all sort of like formal in ways that of imams talking to each other in that way. And then at one point there's is it Ramadan where they all have fasting, and in the red light district they go, oh yeah, we did that because you have to fast up until sunset, but after sunset that's great. So all we needed to do is switch our time zone back. We just delayed our day for an extra 4 hours, and everything just carried on as normal within the Buddhism. But yeah, it's just really interesting. And also the turns of phrases. I mean, I really should have written some of these turns of, like, when I hear some of these clever things in these stories, I should really write them down. But like, I was giggling quite a lot reading this book, even in some of the worst places. When Madrid is at his lowest point, he'll say some different stuff and just describe a situation or describe someone else or just make a comment about someone, and it just makes you grin all the way through because it's got that really great. Oh, there's a good quote here on the Audible page. Here it says, a kind of cyberpunk Raymond Chandler book with dashes of Roger Zelazny, Ian Fleming, and Scheherazade. I don't even know that thing. But altogether original, as by Robert Silverberg said that. But it really is. It's that kind of like Raymond Chandler kind of turns of phrase and clever metaphors and clever similes, I guess is the word. You know, different little descriptive phrases. And it's definitely bringing that. But it's that, like say, filtered through this Arab Islamic or Muslim mindset and culture as well. And also, I really like the point with Ian Fleming. It is good as well, because at one point, Modred is thinking, because he's trying to track down this killer who was at one point in James Bond. So he's thinking back to the James Bond books that he's read and trying to work out what the character or what stage of James Bond's life is this killer plugging into and using and things like that. So it references some of these different sort of writers and these different styles quite directly, not just within the subject matter of spies and international intrigue and things like that with diplomats and exports, import and things like, but it, you know, there's all different kinds of stuff all the way throughout the writing as well. And the narration by Jonathan Davis is great. It's really, really good. It's strange because he also narrated the Wind-Up Girl, which again is sort of a fun take on the future where America has sort of fallen, but in that sort of like East Asia is now this powerhouse because they've got all the, you know, these clockwork things or whatever it is like that. But again, it was a bit strange because when Jonathan Davis was talking about these different people going into sex shows and working with sex workers, that's the same thing that happens in The Wind-Up Girl, is that someone goes in and he starts talking to these sex workers and there's the pimps there and the people who run the bars. And it felt like I was back in that world, and I think Jonathan Davis has a really good voice for that. However, his narration was a little bit slow, but I clicked 2x speed, which is actually about 1.5 times speed, which I noticed now by timing these books and seeing how long it takes to get through. An hour's worth of audiobook actually takes around about 45 minutes. It's not 30 minutes, about 45 or 40 minutes to get through an hour's worth of audiobook. But I just pressed that button 2x speed or 1.5 times speed, and it really picked up the pace, and was a lot of fun in that way. Talking about what do I do now? Themes, thematically. Yeah, I mean, I've touched on quite a lot of these things. I mean, there's so much to do with, as you would expect, with these books, which is like personal identity, where the consciousness is. Are you and the whole sort of personal responsibility thing? It's sort of like, okay, if you plug in somebody else's brain and then do something, are you responsible for that then, or is it the person who plugged you in? At one point, it's heartbreaking where somebody plugs in a moddy or daddy into somebody else's brain. And everything goes wrong, and they didn't understand it because they don't know what's going on there at all. And then it's like, okay, so who needs to take responsibility for something somebody else does when they're here, you know, in that kind of thing? And of course, some of these criminals are honourable in some ways. So it's actually Friedlander Bay who sometimes takes responsibility for it because he's the guy pulling the strings. But other times, the people like who are actually doing the thing, using their hands, even if they've got moddies and daddies in them, they're the ones responsible. So there's some really great stuff in there. And also, I really like the different the different take of, I wouldn't say religion, but like I say, this different culture's views towards towards this technology and how it's being used. Like, you at one point suddenly Mordred goes out of the Budayin, and I always thought there was no money there and everyone there was poor and stuff like that. But then, like, how much Mordred would pay for one drug, one hit? He goes to this, you know, he goes into this slum area of the city, and suddenly you realize, oh wow, actually all these people, they are sort of the underbelly of society, but they're actually really rich. There's a lot of money going through those places. It's like, you go out in last week or a few days ago, I was in Norway, and you went out, and no red light district or anything, but we just went into a bar and I'd forgotten my wallet, so I said, oh, you'd have to buy me a drink, and we did. We got three drinks, and it was £15, sort of like €20 for three drinks. Two coffees and a Coke were like €20 in Norway. And you realize that's where all the money is. They've got all the oil. And it seems like the same thing has happened here again, like that. The different... So where the money is... I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. But like I say, it's just a totally different take on the idea of you know, poverty, and what you think is, like you say, what you think is the underworld is actually where a lot of the power, a lot of the money is, and we don't really see a whole lot more from the, you know, of course, the corrupt policemen and everything like that. What else do I want to say? I don't really think there's much, except that it did make me think. I was talking to someone last night about this book, and they were saying, oh, it sounds a bit like the Matrix, like I mentioned before, the Matrix, the plugging in. Now, a few weeks ago, or was it last week, the week before, I watched a movie called Ghost in the Shell. And actually, if you want to know where the Matrix comes from, just watch Ghost in the Shell. That is something, like, the opening credits have green letters scrolling down the screen in exactly the same way. And a lot of the Matrix, oh, there's a lot of shots in the Matrix which are shot for shot, the same as Ghost in the Shell. And again, that's sort of like, well, that's it. It's a Japanese animation. But again, it seems to have that same kind of feel. And I really enjoy cyberpunk when done well. Comparing this book, I mean, this book was George Alec Effinger. He wrote this book. Let me see here. I'll just open up his Wikipedia page. It's one click away. So he wrote this book. And then he wrote another two follow-ups to this one, and then he died, and that was it. And I'm thinking, if this guy had been, you know, still writing today, he would be, I reckon, would be held up in the same regard as someone like William Gibson. And so if you want a 1980s cyberpunk book, forget Snow Crash, forget Neuromancer. Neuromancer is well written, but the story in Neuromancer is just all over the place and a bit pathetic. The story in this is really crisp. Like I say, once it picks up, you really start feeling it. But it's not just cyberpunk Japanese, and then they go to America, and then they go to space. This feels very fresh. Even though it's 1987, I've never really read a book quite like it before. Like I say, I guess the book which is most like it that I've read recently is maybe The Wind-Up Girl. But again, that might be just from the narration. So just check out what this says here. It was... I can't see. I'm sure this was nominated for both the Nebula and the Hugo Awards, but I can't see where it was noticed. So I think that'll do for this review. I will give this book 4 stars out of 5 stars because it's really, really good fun. It's one of those books that I could say there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not exactly my style. Like you say, I'm not really that interested in reading crime novels in this way, because I don't know, just like say bad people doing bad things to other bad people doesn't really capture my attention. It doesn't make me think, oh, I really want to spend more time with these characters. But it is very, very, very well done. I don't think I've got anything bad to say about it, except that it started off a little bit slower than I was expecting. And the second half, I wouldn't say the second half is better than the first half, but it changes tone in so many ways, and the story picks up and the characters pick up, and suddenly you understand a little bit more what is going on and some motivations of different characters. Then you're like, ah, oh, good stuff like that. So yeah, 4 stars, highly recommended. The next book I'm going to review is, well, I'm not sure, because there's this, like I say, this Stephen Erickson, Eric Stevenson, Stephen Erickson, Gardens on the Moon. I'm probably not going to finish that book because I've got like the new R. Scott Baker book. It's called The Judging Eye, The Aspect Emperor, Book One. So this is the first book in the second trilogy from R. Scott Baker, set in the world of the Prince of Nothing, the darkness. The darkness that comes before, and all that kind of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to this book. And the more time I'm spending on The Gardens of the Moon, Malazan, Book of the Fallen, Book One, I'm just thinking, I'm just not enjoying this, and I just want to read this other fantasy book. So I think I'm going to put aside The Gardens of the Moon. The worst thing about The Gardens of the Moon is that you start off, and maybe I mentioned this, I know I mentioned this on my goodreads.com updates about it. So what did I write about this? I said, I'm on page, let's have a look here. The first status update that I wrote here, I might as well talk about this. Yeah, I've lost it. There it goes. This starts with one of the most epic magic battles I've ever read, and I thought, and who I thought was the main character is already dead. Where can it go from here? So it starts in the middle of this massive battle, and then in the middle of a massive war with characters who are in the middle of their lives, and this is the first book of a 12-book series, and already you're having epic magic battles, and then the story, it's okay, but then we get to skip across to another group of characters, and you realise that the character who is dead is just brought back to life, and the gods just intervene, and it's very, like I say, it's epic in a way which is quite, you know, mythical, but the gods are real, and everyone knows the gods are real, and the gods are interfering in the world of, you know, in the everyday world. So I'm thinking the only reason, that the only way that this book can have any meaning is if we don't actually care about the things that are happening on Earth or on the world, and then we care about what the gods are doing. Because if the gods die, they probably can't be brought back to life. So it's really strange that we're spending time on Earth when I think the real story is going to take place in heaven or in the spiritual realm. And I don't want to read 12 books to find out that one of these characters is going to become a god and then go on to rule all the gods in heaven as well as the earth, which I'm sure it will get that big, because if it starts off with massive epic battles of characters killing each other and wiping each other out and different things, and this person is doing this and this person is doing that, and there's all this, if it starts off like that, it can only start getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'm just not willing to put in 12 books worth. And I don't think any kind of story is going to end by the end of book one. So I'm probably not going to read that anymore. But The Judging Eye, I know I've read the first trilogy, and each book ended at a really good point, at an ending point. And apparently this book, The Judging Eye, finishes on a cliffhanger, but the second book in this trilogy finishes at a satisfying point. So I know I can read both of those books in quite quick succession. So I'll probably do The Judging Eye, and I'll check out an audiobook. I've got The Terminal World by Alistair Reynolds, so I'm probably going to start listening to that today. Otherwise, that's it from me. Email me, luke@juggler.net, if you want to get in contact with me in any way. Also, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurge on Twitter. You can check out my blog, lukeburge.com/blog, or check out my original fiction. You can find it linked from lukeburge.com. And also check out my new podcast series, which is called Luke's Creative Podcast. Maybe that's been in the feed. Actually, the feed at the moment, the RSS feed, is broken, but you can go to my website, lukeburge.com/creative, for that podcast. And I'm sure you can work out what to do there to listen to some of the episodes. There's 4 episodes up already, and there'll be 10 episodes within this season 1, which I'll be putting up over the next 6 weeks. Otherwise, that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.